This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
What's up, y'all? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are in the 3 o'clock hour, and so it is time to talk money. On today's edition of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, I love it when I have data nerds on the show because I am one myself. And today is no exception. We're going to cap off this week by talking to an accomplished economist about the biggest economic issue on everybody's minds, inflation. Mike Matowitz is the principal economist for the Roosevelt Institute, a think tank that focuses on corporate and public power, labor and wages, as well as the economics of race and gender inequality. And importantly, this is how you know he's a real data nerd. He is on the Data Users Advisory Committee for the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And if you don't happen to be an economist, the BLS is basically where we get all of our data from to run our little regression models and things. So Mike is the real genuine article, as they say. Welcome, Mike. Thanks for making time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I love talking about this stuff. So let's start out with the basics. Inflation has been real bad for a few years. Where are we at now?
Like, we're in, I don't know if we're going to call it our happy place. We're in a much happier place.
Happier place. I like it.
Yeah. It was like, I'm going to do my best to be audio friendly and not try and draw charts and graphs with my hands. but we went through a couple of years of like where we thought we were going to have some inflation, probably more than we wanted. And then we got a lot more inflation than we wanted. And then there was, another year in change of being deeply worried about exactly how much inflation we were having and what it was going to take to get it back down to normal levels. I am not going to brutalize the terminology of any of the aviators listening, but there were a lot of discussions about hard landings and soft landings and whether it was a landing at all. But I feel like we're, you can talk to really big nerds about this who are really, really concerned. And kind of everybody is like, yeah, we're sort of through the worst of that. And this did not come out as badly as people thought it would on the inflation side. And then, when you look at the flip of this, if you go back to the last recession, we spent like almost a full decade getting back to, close to the level of GDP growth, employment, rising wages that we should have been having without a recession. And in this case, we got there in like a year or two. We're still way above where we should have been. And, I think if you're an economist, which thank God for most people, they are not, and you only care about like the forward-looking view of the world, it's like, yeah, this is the economy we sort of want to be going with, right? Like, we have inflation back down and our future prospects for growth and making everything more affordable are a lot better. But that said, like, it wasn't easy getting here.
Yeah, definitely some pain points along the way. What I think is interesting about just the way media covers economics, right, is when inflation is rising, and inflation from a layperson's perspective, just to do some defining here, it's a measure of the rate at which things are becoming more expensive. And so when we look at that, when we see inflation going up above a level that is usually the target, somewhere in that 2.5 range, right, 2.5% range, the press covers it a lot. And there's a lot of hand wringing and pearl clutching and whatever other tortured metaphor we want to use. But the media doesn't seem to cover it in the same way, simply because it doesn't have the fear factor in it when inflation is coming down. Here, there's been a lot of attention because of the presidential race and a lot of assertions from the more right-leaning outlets that everything is still terrible. And there's this gulf that we're trying to bridge between this actual reality state of our economy, which is frankly very good, and the fact that people are still feeling pain in making their paychecks stretch. How can it both be true that like our economy is now in a highly desirable place? We've got good macroeconomic indicators, and yet people still feel like their paychecks aren't able to make it work.
No, that's completely reasonable. And I think this is one of the big problems that we have in terms of the way economists think about inflation and the way that, you know, real people human experience people. It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like fine. It's like, so if you're an economist and gas prices go up because, I don't know, a pipeline breaks or there's a random war in, say, Eastern Europe, hypothetically speaking, you know, these are things that happen. And for the economists, the idea is, well, we don't want policy to respond to these things because like there's nothing we're going to do with interest rates or deficits that's going to make peace in the Middle East. You know, it'd be awesome. But, you know, that's not how that works. And so, you know, the economist view is like, well, we should probably try and tune that whole thing out because, you know, that's going to crowd our decision making and make us make policy errors. And, you know, if you're a real human person, you're like, cool, I would love it if you guys didn't make policy errors, but also I still need to get to work. And, you know, I can't do that without putting gas in my car. And I think that's been, to some extent, like a big disconnect here is that like, at least for the last year and change, economists have been like, yo, this is starting to look pretty good. Because, you know, we have seen, I think the big worry for economists was that we had big food price spikes and big gas price spikes. And those are things that, you know, really hit people hard. And if you're an economist, you're supposed to ignore it when it happens immediately, but you're supposed to care a lot about what it does to how people think about future inflation, right? So, okay, great. I'm sure that matters a ton when you're trying to get home from high school on a half tank of gas, as some of us have done. Yeah, like, so I think we probably got a little too caught up in this to, you know, address the world that we were dealing with in real life. And ironically, the sort of flip of this is like, you know, when that was going on at the time, you had a lot of economists being like, well, this isn't that, but like, you know, from the core measures that we're worried about, which leave out all the stuff that people are really, really mad about.
That really buy. Food, gas. Then,
right. Then, you know, we're like, well, we're not too worried about this, right? And now we've had inflation come down a bunch. And, you know, partly it's the measures economists care about, and it's also the things that we're worried about setting off future inflation, right? Like we have not had an economy where people have decided, oh yeah, we got to raise prices. It's like 5-10% every year to keep up with inflation. Like that's just, that hasn't happened. And you could kind of see that from really nerdy data if you really wanted to. But I think the, you know, the flip here is like, as prices have come down, the real thing that's been pushing prices down, especially for the last year, has been gas prices. And, you know, just as economists were kind of like not wanting to talk about it on the way up, we have been talking about it a lot on the way down. And, you know, we know from research that, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, I believe is the, term in the news, right? So, like there's been more research this time now that we have like better robots to tell us how people are speaking about like how much more news coverage responds to bad news about gas prices than good news about gas prices. So you kind of have that built-in factor. And then you also have the economists who are like, yeah, don't worry about it now. And also not trying to like, you know, you can imagine that a year or two ago when gas prices were going up, there were economists who were like, yes, but we should also be worried about the big picture. And, you know, the same people are kind of like, well, let's not stress gas prices going down now. And maybe they were right on both counts, but in the sense that the news was not really buying the gas prices don't matter as much on the way up. There's no one sort of pushing media coverage to be like, wait, gas prices are down a ton.
Little segment we do with folks like my current guest, Mike Matowitz, who is the principal economist at the Roosevelt Institute. We're sort of the anti, we do not follow any of the media rules. Like, no, let's talk about inflation. Let's talk about economics. The opposite of it bleeds, it leads. It's really interesting to me that, you know, when economists talk about things like inflation, there is often not, I would say, a real good, succinct explanation of the interrelated factors, right? And the inflationary spike that we saw that really hit its peak here in the US in June of 21, right? This is like well over 3+ years ago, right? That was at its peak. we weren't very good at saying to people, look, there's the COVID supply chain shortage. You have geopolitical disruptions. You had shipping chance. And by that, I mean both Ukraine and then obviously currently we've got what's going on in the Middle East, which has these sort of, is it the dog wagging the tail or what's happening here? But it has these impacts. There's this whole sort of litany of causes. And it feels to me like we don't do a good job explaining those things, right? That when you see less regulation from a monopolistic or antitrust perspective, absent other factors, you're going to see prices rise more quickly because companies can engage in price fixing. That when you have inflationary periods, it also presents an opportunity for companies after their input prices come down, the actual cost of goods sold, they can keep prices high because people have shown that they'll still consume goods at a certain level. So you have price gouging. We've not been good about talking about the things that actually have a very specific attribution, right? A responsibility. So when I think about inflation, there's a whole bunch of stuff we can't directly control, but there is a set of things that we can from a regulatory or monetary or fiscal policy perspective. Can we talk about a little bit, Mike, what are some of the things that we can do to limit future inflation?
Yeah, I mean, there are many things here. And I think, you know, I will totally raise my hand as an economist who's gotten a lot of this stuff wrong in the past. Like, I think, you know, one of the weird things that economists say is like, actually, gas prices, like, this is like a super competitive sector. And the idea here is like, look, if I'm running the Chevron across from the Exxon and we are across the street from each other, then like that's pretty close to real competition, right? And like, on the one hand, that's true. Like you really can just go make a U-turn and buy gas at the next pump if they're offering a better price than me. You know, kind of the thing that I think we've learned more about because we've had a lot of enforcement on, you know, prospective mergers this time is you've seen sectors that we think of as really competitive, like gas stations or grocery stores, you know, when you dig into the documents, you see things from their CEOs that's like, oh yeah, like we should definitely use this and push margins up. Or like literally, you know, the people running American oil companies texting with members of OPEC where it's OPEC. Like, well, we're not really part of your cartel, but what if we were a little bit?
You know, how about this slightly higher price per barrel? Mike, hang on one second. We're going to have to take care of some business. Folks, if you're listening, welcome. It's Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. We're talking about inflation right now with the principal economist for the Roosevelt Institute. His name is Mike Matowitz. You're going to want to keep it locked. We're going to dig in to these price gouging, price fixing behaviors more when we return on today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Keep it locked.
The Patriotic Millionaires also purchase advertising time on various civic media stations throughout Wisconsin.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, y'all. It is the Friday edition of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. I'm Maggie, and my special guest this half hour is the principal economist for the Roosevelt Institute. His name is Mike Matowitz. So happy to have you, Mike. So we were talking about the fact that when we think about the non-core, and we're using little buzzwords here, the non-core products we buy, right, the most of, meaning food and gas, which are the things that the vast majority of Americans sort of, it's the lens through which we understand the economy is how much does it cost me to feed my family? You can maybe throw housing in there as well. But food, gas, housing, when that's expensive, we think things are not going well or too expensive relative to what our expectations are. And we've been talking about the fact that both in grocery and in oil and gas production, there has basically been increasingly monopolistic and behaviors, consolidation, I would say some significant deregulation in the oil and gas industry, But all of this has led to an opportunity for there to be wink, wink, nudge, nudge price fixing or price setting, right? Like, oh, it's not actually price fixing, but it looks like it. It quacks and has feathers, as well as, frankly, price gouging. So we know that there lies some solutions in there. But I wanted to ask you this question, because this is the thing that I think a lot of people don't put together. What is the relationship between tax policy, when we talk about corporate tax rates and income tax rates, especially if we can just separate us all into the 95% of us who work for a living and earn a paycheck that is somewhere south of, say, like $400,000, $500,000 a year, and the ultra wealthy or the top 5%. What does tax policy have to do with inflation? How do these interact?
Yeah, I think this is actually another one too, where we have like a lot better data now than probably 20, 30 years ago when like the last time we had a serious debate about this happened. And, you know, I think especially this recovery, you know, one of the reasons you saw house prices go up so much was that people who had like cash to go buy a spare house just kind of did it. And, you know, that's great. I think everyone should have a beach house. That's the dream. Most of us have one house, and people adding a second makes it harder for most of us to buy one. And that's one of the reasons that rents have gone up. You could imagine that if you didn't have an extra $400,000 or $500,000 sitting around to pay cash for a beach house, that, you know, something like that could be a pretty big difference. And I think this is like, when you look at where the inflation happened, like, yes, there were the things that we've talked about where it's like, yeah, there was bird flu that pushed up egg prices. Yes, there were, you know, a series of supply chain disruptions that mattered a lot for the oil and gas industry that pushed up, you know, the cost of filling up a car. But like a lot of the housing type stuff, we had a big lack of building for a couple of years. And then we also just had like a lot of people with money to burn who really did buy like second houses. You know, you could imagine that it's not that onerous to set tax policy such that people don't, you know, throw off enough money from their high income, high paying jobs to like decide to just buy a spare house, right?
I call it over consuming relative to what other working people need to consume, right? Those are some of the comparisons we need to start to try to make, because I mean, we were talking about price fixing, that we've also seen evidence that some of that is happening in the housing markets as well, right? As more and more private equity firms buy up large, like try to basically monopolize housing stock in various regions, they're able to set literally market rents that are above market, right? Because they are the price setter. Sorry to jump
in. I think housing is a great place to talk about this too, because again, we're talking about there should be a formal term for the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, don't read my text price fixing, yeah. Right? So, you know, we've seen a lot of like algorithmic pricing now where it's like you have a bunch of landlords in one place sort of going to the same data vendor to be like, what should I set my interest rate or what should I set my rent increase at next year? And, you know, if they were just asking one or two people, that'd be one thing. They're all reporting to the same place, and we're all paying the costs that thing reports out. So, you know, it has this nice way of saying like, I'm not the one who price fixed. I just paid the subscription fee that
allowed us all to price fix together.
Yeah, they just told me what I should charge
magically. Yeah. And we know, and for folks that may be listening, we know that this happened. You can check it out. You can use the Google Texas housing price fixing, just go check it out. You can find the articles on this. We've got about 2 minutes left, Mike. I wanted to ask you this. What should the Fed be doing right now in terms of inflation and employment? These are the two things that they try to balance with their interest rate policy. And secondly, to touch briefly on the importance of a central bank's independence.
Yeah, we really like an independent central bank. One of the things we liked a lot about it for the last recovery was that we were able to say, you know, let's not do a really long time with unemployment, or let's not wait for everyone in Congress to hold hands and figure out the perfect policy. Let's do the right thing. And then, you know, if we do too little or we do too much, the Fed can kind of clean it up for us because they're independent. I worry a lot about what's going to happen if we're you know, we're not doing anything there. And then, yeah, I think like we're probably going to see the Fed come off things a little bit more now that we are sort of on the backside of inflation. Whether that looks like we're going to cut things a half point or a quarter point for the next few meetings, I'm not really sure. But interest rates are clearly on the way down just because inflation is on the way down.
Yes. Folks, that's Mike Matowitz, the principal economist at the Roosevelt Institute, a friend of mine and now a friend of all of you. Thanks so much for sharing some of your incredible knowledge with all of us. I love it. I hope you stay on the Data Users Advisory Committee for the BLS. We rely on that data. It is the source from which we gain our insights. Speaking of which, the Bureau of Labor Statistics needs to stay pretty independent as well, because the data matters. Garbage in, garbage out.
We love them.
Oh, that is the only way economists can do what they do. Folks, that's going to do it for today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Thanks so much to Mike Matowitz. We're going to come back after the bottom of the hour with Terry Barr for what's good, local, and overlooked here in Wisconsin. We may even talk about some of our favorite horror movies to take us off into this near Halloween weekend. So keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream.
Hope you all are living your dreams on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Hi, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to be talking about some horror films this section of the show. So if you've got a favorite horror movie that you want to share some memories of or give your vote to, join us all. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Phone and text lines are open. Of course, I'm going to ask our wonderful producer, Jess, what she thinks. But before we get to those horror films, folks, it is time for what is good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin with one of my favorite ladies, Terry Barr. Happy Friday, Terry. Welcome.
Oh, happy Friday to you, and you are one of my favorite ladies as well. How about we talk about cranberries today?
I love it. It's fall. Do it. Woo!
It is. You know, sometimes I feel like this little fruit is overlooked unless maybe it's Thanksgiving. But Wisconsin, once again, has the crown as being the cranberry capital of the world. And so much money comes into Wisconsin. This is so fascinating, I think. $1 billion every single year. And we didn't always have the cranberry capital of the world crown. We took it away from Massachusetts in the mid-1990s, but we've never given it back since then. So yes, $1 billion a year coming into Wisconsin. That's according to the Wisconsin cranberry growers. And much of it, Maggie, is happening along what is now dubbed the Cranberry Highway. Wisconsin Rapids, Nakusa, Toma, but Warrens has a cranberry museum. Cranberries are one of the only native fruits in Wisconsin. So you can imagine this museum goes way back, showing you every single way they used to have to hand pick the cranberries to when they finally got some machines to help them out. So I'm just going to say, if you're looking for a great road trip right now, and this weekend is supposed to be gorgeous, I would hit Highway 54 off of I-39 around the Stevens Point area and then just start heading towards Wisconsin Rapids. And there are cranberry bogs and farms and places where you can stop all along that highway. How fun.
That's awesome. I've always been very proud of our cranberry industry here in Wisconsin. My mom makes, I think, somewhere north of like 3 or 4 different kinds of cranberry sauces. So one of them is like a chutney almost. And then she's got like a very sort of rough cut orange cranberry thing. She does a very traditional cranberry sort of sweeter jam that she boils down with champagne in it. So it's got this effervescence to it. I mean, really good stuff.
I think we need a recipe,
Maggie. And a jar I need a recipe. Too.
Yeah, I will. You know what, everybody, if you're listening and any of that sounds really good to you, I will hook it up next week. Terry, you're going to help me remember to get out the Shirley Dawn cranberry recipes and put them up in our show notes or somewhere on the Civic page, because I could, my mom, her cranberry bread is amazing. I've got a great cranberry recipe. I make this is for Thanksgiving. I usually do this every year. It is a combo cranberry apple pie. So you legit get like the best of both worlds. You basically have to bake off the crust and then you get the cranberry part to set up and then you do the I think you do the apples on the bottom because they're a little heavier, and then you do the cranberry on top and then you put the crust on the top. But I will figure out some way to get everybody hooked up with some Shirley Dawn cranberry recipe specials. Absolutely.
I love it. And, you know, the thing I think we're learning more about is everybody, you know, is really trying to eat in a more healthful way. Cranberries are so good for you, including, you know, inflammation. They've got all kinds of vitamins. There's fiber. So if you're just looking for something that you can munch on or make some of Shirley Dawn's recipes to put cranberries in your life a little more, that's the way to go.
Well, and given that it's my mom's birthday coming up, it is only appropriate to give Shirley a shout out and say, you make a great cranberry sauce, Mom, for sure. What else you got for us, Terry?
Well, let's get a little spooky here so that we can get into the haunted movie talk. Door County has this incredible ghost trolley running right now. And what's special about it, though, is the tour guide. You got to get this guy as your tour guide. Carl Siracki. Carl is a history teacher and a haunted history buff. So you just know this is going to be good. You cruise around the Fish Creek area, and he points out haunted spots and tells the stories about what may have happened there. And, you know, you can believe it or not, whatever. It's just a really fun time, especially at this time of year. But he does really dive in deep to some of the tales, like the 6-year-old child who died due to a splinter, believe it or not. But this was back in 1905. The child's buried in one place, the parents are buried somewhere else, and everybody talks about, and he tells the story, and he has seen this, he claims, that this child still roams the area looking for where his parents are buried. Now, that would be spooky to see. And, you know, from a history teacher, you know that this has got to be a little bit of reality, I guess, twisted into your fright.
Yes, of course. That ghost trolley up in Door County is pretty famous. That is a huge draw. I did it way back in the day. This is during some of my, you know, other misadventures of Maggie in the Door Peninsula during college. May have involved Husbies and Sister Bay and all, you know, a Jimi Hendrix song or two, you know, all these good things that we did back in the day.
That's
in
awesome.
Milwaukee, there is this very cool cigar bar in the near Third Ward. It's called Shakers, and it's one of the oldest bars in the state, and they're supposedly haunted as well. And they Shakers is a good joint to go have a cigar, maybe a little scotch, and tell a story or two. And ghost stories are definitely welcomed at Shakers. I love that. I went on probably the scariest ghost tour of my life with a bunch of girlfriends when we all went to Savannah together. which is, of course,
oh,
the
I've heard
setting.
That's supposed to be spooky.
It was really, we did it at night. It was like a night tour at like 10:30 at night. And Savannah is also an open container city. So you're walking around with your wine, right? And so I'm not sure if it was the booze or the scary stories, but we were all definitely in a fright. That is for sure.
Oh my gosh. You know, there is also a bar in Madison, the Ohio Tap. It is also supposed to be haunted. It's since been renovated, but I was there with some friends and we knew one of the bartenders who took us into the basement to show us all these little cracks and crevices and this little secret spot when during Prohibition, that's where they would kind of slide the ill-gotten
yes.
booty through.
Yes.
But the people we were with swore they could feel spirits touching them and like a cold breeze going by. I didn't get any of that sense, but, you know, how am I supposed to doubt the friends I'm with? Of course, there's probably a little bit of alcohol involved, but...
Yeah, that always, the booze always, you know, ratchets up your old spidey sense a couple of notches for sure. Or either that or your imagination. Either way, you're getting a fright out of it. So, Terry, do you have a favorite horror film?
Oh, you know, when I heard you were talking about this, it made me have to think back. But
yes.
My favorite still is the original Friday the 13th from 1980. And if you remember the premise of it, it's a bunch of kids that find this abandoned summer camp and they decide they're going to bring it back and turn it into a great camp for kids again. Yeah, that doesn't happen. Doesn't go well.
That's those setups. There is a formula to these. You'll be excited here, Terry. We got a new texter from the 608 saying that the Cranberry Museum at Warren's sells the best cranberry ice cream they've ever had. A must. Thank you to our texter. Ooh. New texter from the 608. I have to tell you, and Michaela from West Bend texting in that booze and booze go together quite well. I couldn't agree. Puns are always welcome here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Friday the 13th,
oh,
I definitely it is booze and booze. I definitely remember Friday the 13th, watching it when I was probably in like sixth or seventh grade, and definitely having the bejiggers scared out of me by a way of saying, thanks so much, Terry. I really wish you the best weekend. Enjoy your cranberry bogs and your cranberry sauce. And folks, we'll be sure we've got some of those recipes going for you by next week. Terry's going to help keep me honest about that and make sure that we put those out there for everybody.
Yes, because I want those recipes as well. So I will start bugging you already on Monday.
That sounds great. Have a wonderful and beautiful weekend, Terry. Thanks so much. That's Terry Barr, folks, Civic Media's very own. She joins us every Friday for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. It's a great way to kick off your weekend, especially if you don't have your plans sorted out. Terry's going to hook you up no matter what corner of the state you might be in. All the best, Terry. Thanks so much. Folks, if you want to get in on the action in this last bit of the show for the day, we're talking about scary movies. What are your favorites? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Of course, Jess and I are going to weigh in before the show is out, but we want to hear from you. Again, that number is 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Sherry from Horicon. Hello, my friend.
Well, hello, Maggie, my dear. How are you?
I'm doing great.
I love you guys. I just love you. I love you guys.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your texts and your listening. You got a scary movie story.
I do. When I was young, well, I'm 64. So actually in 1964, a movie came out. And we all had black and white TVs. Once we got black and white TVs, finally. And I was little, and I had my first sleepover. And we went and saw a Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte in the sleepover. There was like six of us girls.
Oh,
and
boy.
Upstairs in her old, scary house where she lived. Never been there before. First sleepover, watching Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. And we talked ghost stories first. And, oh, my God, every one of us had to call our mom and dad to come pick us up afterwards.
Oh.
And I've never actually seen that movie since, and I am staying away from that. But my daughter and I have ghost hunted many times.
And
the
no
best
kidding.
Cemetery to ghost hunt, the best cemetery to ghost hunt is out in Juneau, way out in the country. It's an old deserted ghost cemetery. And every single time we've captured things, we've felt things, we've gone up to Fond du Lac to a beautiful old hotel, the Rosemarie down in Madison. We've done this for quite a few years. She just turned 30, and we like to ghost hunt. And but I'll never watch Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte.
Oh, well, thanks so much for calling and sharing, Sherry. I got to say, those older movies really do scare me. I still have, I do not do gore, so I can't do gore in my scary movie viewing. But, the really suggestive, tense, scary movies, my mom and I went to go see the Blair Witch Project together in the theater. And we were literally, clinging on to each other for dear life. Jess, do you have a favorite that pops to mind? Thanks so much, Sherry.
One that really gets me is Hereditary. I still have just a moment passing, light posts. I just have a little thing, and in dark bedrooms, I sometimes look to the corners, and I just sort of expect to see someone skittering about. But a favorite for when I need a laugh is Cabin in the Woods. I love the meta of it.
Yes.
As someone with a classics degree, I love the very archetypal storytelling.
Yeah, it's got some allegory for sure going on there. Folks, that is Jess. She's helping me out here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We want to hear about your scary movies that you like most for this Halloween season. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Keep it locked.
Everything is awesome.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What's up, y'all? Happy Friday, everybody. Hope your weekend is starting soon and going to be beautiful. We got some great weather almost across the entire state. It is just going to be gorgeous almost everywhere. I hope you enjoy it as much as I am hoping to. Celebrating my mom's birthday. I got a wedding tonight. My best friend's birthday. It is just a Festivus this weekend for me, so I'm excited to get it kicked off. But what better way to get it kicked off than to talk with each and every one of you about what your favorite scary movies are? We are in the Halloween season, and since there's so much to be pretty deathly afraid of in real life, I would like some fictional scares as well, because the everyday stuff is just a wee bit too much. I will tell you, The Ring was one of the scariest movies I ever watched because, oh my goodness, I can barely get through it again, and I know what's going to happen. I hate that movie. I hate, love that movie. Is that a thing?
Oh,
Jess?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I used to have really long hair, and one of my favorite things to do would be to just brush it all forwards and just go walking around the house and skittering about, and I don't know, just brought me a lot of joy. But I also worked as a scare in a haunt. I worked, so that
That is, I love finding out new things about Jess. She's one of the producers on the Maggie Dawn Show team. That is a fun Jess fact. You were one
so
of the people
good.
That
Scaring
made me by the
of
age
people.
Of Yes, I mm-hmm. think I went to the last mm-hmm. haunted house when I was in high school, and I almost had a nervous breakdown. I was like, this is not for me. I do not like human beings in scary costumes jumping out at me. Folks, you want to join the convo, get your 2 cents in on your favorite scary movies, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Again, that fun new caller from the 608. Thanks so much for joining us. They're pointing out an oldie called Midnight Offerings from 1981. Melissa Sue Anderson from Little House on the Prairie plays an evil teenage witch. Ew, scary. She battles the good teen witch who was on the Waltons. I'm actually writing that one down. Midnight Offerings. I'm going to check that out. I love a little cheesy scare in that same vein, like the Night of the Living Deads. Cheesy, scary. Those always did it for me. I still will not say Candyman 3 times in the mirror because I saw the OG Candyman film. Oh my gosh. Cam from Appleton saying that his mom also hates Blair Witch, but because his dad begged her to go see it with her and she didn't want to because she hates horror movies, and she got, she actually went in, saw it, got super scared, and his dad fell asleep. I love that. Cam also giving a vote for Hereditary. Mm-hmm. He likes that mm-hmm. one as well. It's generally in like the top 25 lists. If you haven't seen that one, that one's really spooky. Let's see. The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Yep, I have seen that one. Michaela from West Bend, thank you for texting. Since I was raised Catholic, it was really scary and creepy. Gary from Sussex, speaking of Catholicism, you wanted to clarify some of your earlier comments. Go ahead, friend.
Maggie, I love listening to you because you're being so fair with me. I appreciate it. You know, you only gave me like 30 seconds to talk about the Catholic thing. See, I agree with you on what you said. I am outraged by what's going on. I'm not Catholic. I 100%. The point that I was making was you have to be careful how you go out there and you talk about the Catholics and the archbishops and everything else. I said, the fact is, if you'd have been talking about the Muslims and how horrible they are, how on October 7th they went out there and murdered and raped and killed all these people, they're terrible people. You know, then all the priests aren't. But there are some very, very bad priests that are sexual predators. They go into the priesthood to get this, to know that they can get away with this stuff. So,
yeah. Gary, I hear you. I want to say 2 brief things, and I'm sorry, we got some other folks that want to get in here on the scary movie stuff. Gary's referring, I began the show today talking about the Catholic Church for a time. And, you know, you were mentioning Muslims, and I want to make a distinction. The criticism that I was leveling was against leadership in the Catholic Church, and especially Archbishop Dolan. And I think it's important for us to say the problem isn't with Muslims or people that believe in Islam. The problem on October 7th was with Hamas and a terrorist organization. And anytime someone used religion as a cudgel to beat people down with or to cover up crimes and the treatment of others as less than human, that is always the problem. And I don't care which religious robes you happen to wrap yourselves in. Gary, I'll always give you time, my friend, but I want to get everybody else a chance as well. Steve from Madison, you're bringing up a film that still scares me to this day. What's your favorite scary movie?
My most scary movie was The Birds by Alfred Hitchcock. That terrified me. I was about 12 or 13 when I first saw it in the theater. And I can't think of any more scary. I, you know, you couldn't walk around your neighborhood and see a bird without just cringing a little bit. So.
Oh, I totally agree, Steve. You know, those Hitchcock films, if you ever have the chance to see them in the theater like Steve did at a Hitchcock revival, boy, or a film fest, it is worth it because they land completely differently when you are in that dark theater. A texter from the 608 pointing out how scared they were when they watched The Ring as well. Folks, it has been a scream with all of you this afternoon. I hope you have a brilliant weekend. Enjoy the beautiful weather. Eat some cranberries. Celebrate what it means to be a Wisconsinite. And don't forget to check out the Baldwin Hovde debate starts on the Civic Media Radio Network at 6:50. And of course, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. The Dom Salvia Show is next here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.